So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review me.
Right now, right? That's what you say. We get it by now.
Now, Mr. McMahon sticking his head out of the ring, trying to prevent anybody from getting a good look at the bald billionaire from WrestleMania 23.
What's he gonna do now? There's no place to hide. Oh my God! Look at that!
McMahon is in a. Is he in no man's land? McMahon has found the sanctuary of Lillian's skirt.
He's safe. He's safe. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That's the ultimate embarrassment.
The chairman of WWE has been humiliated again by ECW champion Bobby Lashley.
God, Lily, cover yourself!
Bobby Lashley gives Mr. McMahon even more reason to despise the ECW champion.
Oops, there goes my skirt, dropping to my feet.
Welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock and waiting. It's WrestleMania week here at LiveAudioWrestling.com. And today we're celebrating the Raw taking place from April the 2nd of 2007. A Raw that has not entered anyone's mind during this week and probably ever after this show.
I don't think anybody will ever talk about this ever again outside of this podcast.
When we picked our WrestleManias to review this year, 96 and 2007, we tacked on the night after Raw because
they're typically big shows.
Yes. And I did not envision that the 96 one would so far and away be the superior show to 2007, where you think of that time period, that was only 9 years ago, when the night after WrestleMania, you still associated it as being a big show. God, was this not a big show in 2007 in Dayton, Ohio?
Yeah, this was
Raw, a normal Raw,
very normal.
No debuts, hangover in full effect, and I can't say way that I was itching to wonder, ooh, what is next after WrestleMania? It was the big show is over, and now it's back to the real world.
It was the big show is over. Not the wrestler, but the...
He was continuing.
Yeah. The show is done. Now let's try to fill 2 more hours of content with whatever energy we have.
Could you imagine if this was 3 hours?
Mm-mm.
This dragged more than most 3-hour Raws do for me present day.
Yeah.
It took me multiple sittings to get through this 2-hour Raw.
From just talking about, you know, the initial... segment on the show, I think you'll realize that the whole thing was probably, they were probably scrambling for some ideas.
Yes, this very much felt like WrestleMania ended and Monday morning we got to write a show.
Yeah.
Because we're on the air tonight. We're going to get into this voice. This particular show, last week we discussed WrestleMania 23, and prior to that, it was the Raw going into WrestleMania. Maybe the high point of Jim Ross's tenure on Raw. That wonderful video, a standing ovation in Chicago. This Raw might have been Jim Ross's least favorite edition of Raw.
Mm.
His voice was a goddamn mess.
Yeah, it was actually completely... By the end of the show, was completely gone.
Like, he really should have been pulled.
Yeah.
It was bad. Like, this guy should not have been on the air with this voice. It was so hard to listen to.
I would say, like, almost like it seemed like a half hour into the show, he had already started to lose his voice.
And it just got worse and worse. And finally, by the main event, he was tapped.
And I'm sure, you know, Grisham or whoever was on standby in the back, I'm sure Vince, or whoever was in control back there was probably really a little bit anxious to pull him. But at the same time, you're just coming off of this Hall of Fame induction for this guy. I'm sure there are a lot of things under consideration.
Well,
but we got to hear Jerry Lawler call play-by-play.
Jerry Lawler, one of the few times he did play-by-play. We're going to get to that in the main event, but that is a long, long way away from how this show started.
Mm.
John Cena comes out fresh off of his main event win over Shawn Michaels to a large amount of boos. Ross and Lawler are putting over the main event big with the two of them and mentioning just casually that the man took a pile driver onto the steel steps at WrestleMania, and he also injured his knee. Amazing, this recovery of John Cena after being pile-driven onto the steel steps. And they cut to all of these pro-John Cena signs in the crowd, and Cena is kind of just standing there, milking the reaction, and it was mixed. There were cheers amongst the boos. And then he says, "The champ is here." And before he can get into his speech, Shawn Michaels comes out. And over the course of the past week, Shawn was able to dig up his tag team championship title. And he walks out with it. John Cena still searching for his. And as he comes out from the back, he just tosses this thing on the floor because the priority was, I got to pose. I got to pose for my pyro, and that requires my hands in the air and no title to weigh me down.
The tag team belts were just treated
trash.
Like complete garbage. Complete garbage on this show.
He had a bandage on his forehead, and he gets into the ring and he says that Sunday night was not about screw jobs, mind games, or massive egos, brother. Just inserting that knife and twisting it. To Mr. Persona non grata, Hulk Hogan, who had no presence at WrestleMania, and Shawn Michaels, who still very much recalling his interactions with the Hulkster back in 2005, of which I'm sure Shawn Michaels was very upset that that particular tape was released of his match. And he says it wasn't about who got cheered or booed or shaking hands. It was about winning and losing, and he lost. And he is sick of telling someone that they are the better man, and he is not going to say that about John Cena. He will not relinquish and state that John Cena is the better man. Cena says, any time, any place for a rematch. And Michael says, I'm not busy tonight. But that would require something huge to happen on Raw, and Jonathan Coachman was not going to see any of that. He came out, and Michaels, to clear the pathway so that he can properly hear Coachman's words, just kicks the tag title out of the way to the side of the ring. This little child's toy that he might slip on. Coach says there's not going to be any WWE title match tonight. He says that those two may have forgotten, but they are the tag team champions, which they probably wish they could forget. And they're going to defend them tonight. And Jonathan Coachman, sensing that these two were going to start off Raw in the ring together, has contacted all three brands, and we are going to have a 10-team over-the-top battle royal with the winning team becoming the tag team champions. And Jim Ross was just speechless at this stipulation announcement by Jonathan Coachman as we were going to kick off Raw with a 10-team battle royal way.
Yes, I mean, I don't think I've seen one of these before. A tag team battle royal.
Yes, when you don't want to pin the champions, you got to get really creative to take titles off of them without beating them. Yeah. And they had a battle royal in mind.
Yeah. You know, like this style of kind of opening the show off and then leading right into the big match right after the first segment, I think, you know, has been pretty standard in professional wrestling into the WWE for a long, long time now. But I don't think I'm ever a fan of it, particularly when you have a title change at stake. I just feel like they should always be treated with, I guess, a bit of anticipation. And just to kind of lead into it takes away from the importance of it. But, I mean, watching this show, too, I think, you know, you really realize just how long the WWE has been fighting the audience's natural reaction to John Cena to wanting to boo him. And the boos, I feel, on this show were, you know, at some of the loudest that they've ever been. Like, just Cena, all he did was come out here, And I thought he milked the reaction really well. You know, I think he's always been good at that, embracing the boos. And then all he really did was just slowly lift his arm up and say the champ is here, and that was the end of all his interaction.
Yeah, and this crowd was probably a better sample size of your general WWE fans, because this was not a Raw taking place in the host city the night after WrestleMania. Oh. They were in Dayton, Ohio. So while you may have had some people traveling over for WrestleMania that made the trip to Dayton, you're not exactly drawing from that crowd that it's all of the hardcore, touring, yeah, traveling audience that you will see next Monday, for instance. So wait, here is a roll call of our tag teams in the tag team battle royal with Shawn Michaels and John Cena defending. We had King Booker and Finlay coming out with Charmel, Rob Van Dam and Sabu, Kenny Dykstra and Chris Masters, my pick, Crime Time, The Highlanders, Deuce and Domino, Elijah Burke and Matt Stryker, Jim Duggan and Eugene, and Lawler listed Chavo Guerrero and Gregory Helms, who were actually not in this match.
They were in the next one.
They were in the next one.
Oh, I see.
So I only counted 9 teams amongst these teams.
Huh.
I could have missed them. The 10th team. Let's put that to the message board to figure out. But those were our teams. Welcome to 2007 in the WWE roster.
Weren't Finlay and Booker?
Yeah, I mentioned them off the top. They were out first. Dykstra was knocked out almost immediately. And then Domino hit a pair of jumping knees to eliminate JTG. Eugene was seated on the top, and Elijah Burke drop-kicked him from the top rope and eliminated him. Deuce used a head scissors from the apron to eliminate Rory McAllister. Do you realize that had he come along in 2007, that Dean Ambrose probably would have been either Deuce or Domino?
Why do you say that?
I just look at him and you...
Because of the tank top?
Yes, the tank top is definitely swaying my connection, but you slick his hair back, and he's a 70s greaser.
Yeah.
50s greaser.
Yeah, and maybe in a different time, Deuce would have been Dean Ambrose.
Amazing. Domino could have been a Shield member just years later. You know what I mean?
Man, that's the luck of the draw. It's all about timing.
Timing is everything in this industry. Cena hit an FU to Domino and eliminates both of them. Finlay then eliminates Stryker. Van Dam leaps to the top and gets shoved over the top by Booker T. Looked like a fool. And then it comes down to Cena and Michaels with Booker and Finlay. The crowd did get hot for the final two teams. Finlay landed on the edge of the apron. He goes to grab Cena, but then Michaels, with an excellent super kick, knocks Finlay off the apron, and Cena and Michaels retain the tag titles in 6 minutes and 12 seconds. A pretty simple battle royal. Not a whole lot to break down here. It's just a cluster of guys.
Yeah, and I thought the finish was executed very well. Shawn's and Cena and everybody involved, their timing of the super kick. Again, teasing that animosity between the two, because Shawn very narrowly missed Cena with the super kick, and you don't know if Cena or Shawn was actually intentionally going for Cena or not. So I thought that was done really well. It was really staggering to me to look at the roster in this battle royal and on the show in particular, and just look at how many guys who at this time were really young, fresh projects that they had brought up, and none of them amounted to becoming stars.
That was really staggering on this show to look at the names they had, and you're right, who went nowhere. And I'm not saying everyone here was, you know, a can't miss, but I mean, Kenny Dykstra was someone they were very high on at one point. Chris Masters was a guy that they had very high hopes for that was called up way too early. And you look at other ones here. I mean, just this would be more so in the next match as well, because Coachman would then return and announces that was only part one of their title defense, because now we're going to have a second 10-team battle royal to bring out our next plethora of tag teams, as we had the Hardys with Jeff at least coming out hobbling and selling the Money in the Bank injuries, Paul London and Brian Kendrick, Lance Cade and Trevor Murdoch, Viscera and Val Venus, Marcus Corvon and Kevin Thorne, William Regal and Dave Taylor, Shane Helms and Chavo Guerrero, Johnny Nitro and The Miz, and The Sandman and Tommy Dreamer.
And isn't it just The Miz that's still in the company of all those names?
Of these names,
as an active wrestler,
The Miz, yeah, Regal would not be considered an active wrestler, and that would be about it. That is, that are still there.
Cool. It's cool to. It was also cool to hear to see Michaels with three of his Texas Wrestling Academy students.
That's true.
And,
yes,
Cade Murdoch and Cade and London and Kendrick.
Yeah, that's I didn't even piece that together. Val Venus is knocked out first, and then Regal sent out by Dreamer. Dreamer gets eliminated. Ross is yelling as they go to break, and this poor man. I just wanted to go buy him like a lozenge and some tea. Then we see Nitro gets super kicked off the turnbuckle. He's out. Cena then turns his back, and Michaels throws him out, and they are eliminated. And John Cena, with the facial reaction of the next big action movie star, says, "That's how it's going to be? Fine. Fine." He was mad.
Oh, you could tell.
I do not appreciate that show.
Yeah, it's a...
Why did Michael save him in the first match and then dump him out here?
Well, I mean, again, that was sort of maybe the idea behind the super kick narrowly missing John Cena. But...
Shawn Michaels he's got a hunting show way. His aim is very precise.
That is true. He probably had a change of heart in the middle, in between the two matches, and decided, oh, I'll do one match, but two
Fuck
matches?
This.
Yeah, forget this.
How many battle royals are we going to have here? Let's give up the titles. Yeah.
Why am I doing this? You know, because he goes on to say, like in the interview afterwards, that it does make sense. Doesn't make sense why he actually wrestled the previous match, but. He basically had enough of this tag team titles bullshit.
The story was basically, the world title is important to me. These tag titles are only weighing me down.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Literally. You just have to...
Fantastic run these tag titles had here. Kendrick used a Hurricane Rana to send Chavo over the top to the floor, but then Kendrick falls over top as well, and it's down to the Hardys with Cade and Murdoch, and... Matt fights them off both as they try to eliminate Jeff. The Hardys hit a double leg drop off opposite turnbuckles, and they explain that the longer this match goes, it favors Cade and Murdoch, basically because the Hardys were doing something of note at WrestleMania the night prior, while Cade and Murdoch were lumberjacks. And then we had a baseball slide by Jeff to put Cade to the floor, and all the fans cheer, thinking this is like the Diva Battle Royal rules, where you just have to touch the floor, and the announcers sell it like the finish.
The cameras missed it, too.
The baseball slide?
The cameras missed. They kind of caught it, but it wasn't completely clear why Lance Cade was on the outside. Even JR was confused.
So then Murdoch is climbing the turnbuckle, and they hit the poetry in motion, and Murdoch gets sent off the top to the floor and eliminates that daredevil Murdoch for trying to take a high-risk maneuver there and plummeted down to the Hell's Kitchen of the ring.
Oh, very nice. Okay. Yeah. So the Hardys win. They're the new tag team champions. And I thought both...
Another pair of detectives. The Hardy Boys.
Yes. Very good. Thank you. I thought the matches, obviously, they weren't really anything spectacular. They're pretty much your standard battle royal. But I thought they worked very well as TV segments to kind of keep you interested for a good 45 minutes on this show.
That's how long this was?
I feel like with all three segments, you know, including the interaction
right.
at the beginning and then the two matches. Yeah.
They do note that Jeff is a Raw member and Matt is on SmackDown. So the brand split was getting very loose at this point where talent was able to show up on either show. Pay-per-views were being combined with the rosters. And now the tag titles could essentially be on both shows
mm-hmm.
with these two now holding the tag titles, even though we still had the other set of tag titles, as I recall.
Hmm.
So, a very confusing time.
Who are those champions?
Oh, don't. Please. I cannot possibly remember.
I can usually do pretty well with these random trivia notes, but 2007. This is a
bit of a blur when it comes to titles in 2007 and where they were. They showed the WWE.com headlines coming out of WrestleMania, which, with one headline, Dead Man Reigns.
Uh-oh.
Wow, 2007. Looking into the future. They showed Timbaland in the crowd, a surefire future Hall of Famer. in my opinion.
Oh, you like so much for this?
He'll be part of the rap wing.
Yes. For this appearance alone, you think?
Well, considering
I don't know what else.
Music video with WWE talent.
I'm sure he's been in the crowd many times. Rick Rubin, you would have to
assume. Rick Rubin could have a case.
Yeah.
Funding Smoky Mountain Wrestling.
Well, yeah, I was just thinking just being in the audience.
Well, that's enough. Fred Durst giving the finger at SummerSlam on camera.
Chili, or what is it? Chili? TLC?
Yeah, she should be in 100%.
Definitely.
Yeah, like Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah. I think how is David Arquette not in the WWE Hall of Celebrity Hall of Fame?
It's not an anniversary yet. So wait till
when they go
the
back
20th out. Anniversary. So 2020, he
Got
should
it.
Be in.
Can't wait.
Yeah. WWE. Oh, right. So then they're plugging that Shock Value comes out the next day, which is a great album.
Oh, is it?
BTW.
Cool.
I bought that CD.
What's BTW?
By the way.
BTW.
I was just saying, by the way,
sure.
Great album. Just adding in my own commentary there.
Are you doing that now, using acronyms in real life?
Oh, no, not anymore. After I was just humbled by you. Todd Grisham, the future, but not really, voice of Raw, according to Jim Ross. That's what he told us, that Todd Grisham was being set up to be the voice of Raw until that standing ovation.
I thought Jim Ross actually said the future voice of Raw, not really.
No, no. He's with Shawn Michaels. He has one goal. It's the WWE title. Randy Orton walks in and says he blew his chance and that Cena is giving him a rematch because he knows he can beat Michaels and not Orton. Michael says neither of them are better than him, and we leave. Ross apologizes for his voice, and we mention the fact that there were more fans at Ford Field for WrestleMania than Super Bowl 40, making sure that you remember that fact. And then they throw to the video that closed out WrestleMania, and we go to a camera from the point of view of Vince McMahon backstage, and he's speaking to Coach, and he wants to be taken out to the ring, hiding his bald head. He runs into Maria and Candice Michelle. He takes his hat off and insinuates that he looks hideous. Then he approaches Eugene and Crime Time, who laugh. He calls Eugene a moron. And then he runs into Ron Simmons, who pauses for a long time before saying, "Damn." And we go to commercial, thinking that we're going to get to see Vince McMahon and his bald head next.
They were, on this episode and the go-home show, they were being quite experimental with some of these camera point-of-view camera angles.
Yeah, we got the baby at WrestleMania.
Yep, the crib cam, and then we had Vince McMahon bald-head point-of-view camera as well. So, you know, it's interesting, but I think it also showed you just how, at a time when I feel like, you know, like TNA, maybe not yet at this point, but, you know, soon after they would go into like more of a reality-based documentary style of shooting for these backstage segments, it seemed like the WWE were getting even campier and getting even more, you know, just kind of just like these Vince segments were total camp. They were not to be taken seriously at all.
You know, when they killed Vince McMahon a few months later in the limo, maybe we could have got like the point of view of a guy actually coming and killing Vince. Maybe that's where this was going.
Yeah, sure.
I guess doing a, yeah, that's probably not good considering the timing of all that.
Yeah.
So Vince McMahon comes out with his hat. Wouldn't you love a hat like this?
And Dick Tracy hat?
Yes.
Yeah. It looked like he was in the 60s. Yeah. Or sorry, what is it, 30s? I don't know.
Got the 1830s, maybe. He riles up the crowd and calls it a travesty of justice, and he blames Steve Austin while still mentioning to plug his movie while running the man down. That's a promoter.
Yeah.
Vince McMahon. He says WrestleMania did not happen, and he is changing the record book. And he has Lillian Garcia say the winner of the Battle of the Billionaires is Vincent Kennedy McMahon, and then states he's going to take Bobby Lashley's ECW title and make a match with Umaga, with an incredible delivery of the name Umaga by Vince McMahon. And it led to a chant of "We want Austin." Perhaps the biggest babyface coming out of WrestleMania 23, Steve Austin.
Yeah.
And there was no Steve Austin on this show.
He stunned Donald Trump.
He got the glory spot of WrestleMania, and the Bobby biggest match at Mania.
And Bobby Lashley helped
Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And tonight we had Bobby Lashley that we had to continue with and no Steve Austin. So some lessons there to be learned. He had appeared earlier in the day on the Today Show on NBC, and he did mention the fact that some people may have seen him bald on the website and other places, but that's the last they're going to see of him. He says he has more testosterone in his body than an entire all-male prison. Which, who are we to dispute the testosterone level of Vince McMahon at this particular time period?
Yeah.
And he says he is glad he came and disappointed everyone in this arena tonight. Well, that's kind of that to me is the most accurate comment of this entire Raw. Bobby Lashley comes out and Vince goes to punch him. Lashley ducks and yanks the hat off, and we all see the bald Vince McMahon. Lashley chases after him. Vince puts a towel on his head. Why was there a towel that was right by Lillian's side to be ready? I have no idea. And then Lashley grabs the towel. Then Vince takes Jerry's crown, the cowboy hat. He hides under the ring. Then he runs into the ring, and he hides his head underneath Lillian's skirt. Lashley walks in and then casually tears off Lillian's skirt and laughs as Vince runs to the back.
Yeah.
What a strange segment this was.
No. In the real world, it would be sexual harassment, but in wrestling, it was fun.
Yeah, just tear off a woman's skirt for everyone's amusement.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, I feel like all these Vince segments, they feel like kind of those really cheesy, like, movies that were on, like, Cinemax or, like one of those, like, ski party movies. You know what I mean? Like, you don't know what I'm talking about.
No, but, no, but I am
like,
nodding.
Those movies that just, like, they were straight to video and they're acted terribly. They might feature boobs, and they're all on at like 2 a.m. on TV when you're just like, it's the level of shitty acting and shitty writing. And but they're like, if you watch it for not expecting anything serious, I think they are actually quite enjoyable. And I thought Vince, at least here, was quite funny. I thought his facial expression, you know, was that same classic face that he had when Austin held the gun to his head. I think he's able to treat these in a very appropriate manner. They're not to be taken seriously. I thought he kind of delayed that reaction, played with the audience's anticipation to see his bald head pretty well. So I didn't hate this. I thought it was just a funny, campy segment.
You also very much get the sense that much as they would do at times with Jim Ross, I think they really enjoyed getting to Lillian Garcia.
Sure.
If you look at various incidents.
Well, I mean, the whole thing was planned, you know?
Oh, of course. But I'm sure this was something that, I mean, this very much felt like one of those segments that it was more to amuse the people behind the scenes than it was even the crowd.
Maybe.
Because it was
Lillian. But it was a huge reaction.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Seeing Lillian Garcia's skirt torn off. So we come back afterwards, and the dream team of Ric Flair and Carlito come out, along with Torrie Wilson, to take...
Why were they paired together?
Because...
What was the idea there?
Ric Flair buried Carlito for not caring, and ended up assuming Carlito as his protege, and Carlito looking at Ric Flair as a mentor.
Okay.
To take so on strange. The world's greatest tag team, which on this show, a fucking lie. Because these two teams were not amongst the top 20 tag teams in the WWE.
Yeah.
This is not the world's greatest tag team. This was not even the show's greatest tag team. This was not even the segment's greatest tag team.
They're the 23rd greatest tag team.
However many teams there were earlier, because it's a matter of dispute amongst the teams. Shelton and Charlie were not the best.
Hmm.
So Grisham has replaced Lillian because of her wardrobe malfunction. So attention to detail on their part to at least have Lillian go to the back and then would return later. The storyline here
Carlito was not motivated before the speech he received from Ric Flair, and now they're well on their way. They are on to dark match fame at WrestleMania. You realize WrestleMania 2007 and WrestleMania 2008. Ashley Massaro got two WrestleMania matches, and Ric Flair got one. That was the pecking order in 2007-2008. So we have... This was funny because of the five people out here, the only person that was actually part of the pay-per-view was Tori Wilson as a lumberjill.
No, wow.
Carlito jumps off the middle rope with a reverse elbow to Shelton, tags Flair, he hits them with chops. Carlito pulls the rope down, Benjamin goes to the floor, attacks Haas from behind, and then allows Flair to recover. He comes in, applies the figure four, and gets the submission at 4:31. Flair and Carlito hug, and Jim Ross says that Ric Flair will be in the Hall of Fame one day.
Someday.
So they're going to try and crack the top 20 with this two nights of wins for the team of Ric Flair and Carlito.
You know who will also be in the Hall of Fame? Snoop Dogg.
Snoop Dogg will also be in the Hall of Fame.
Someday.
So Ric Flair and Snoop Dogg both making it into the Hall of Fame. And you know what? Tori Wilson will probably be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. She dated Alex Rodriguez. He'll probably make it.
Alex Rodriguez attended WrestleMania a few years ago. Mm-hmm. So that qualifies him.
Yeah.
Even if he had ordered it on pay-per-view or the network, he would have gotten
it. He tweeted about it,
I mean, Pete Rhodes is in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Anyone
who's willing to show up.
Yes. And then they showed highlights of that year's Hall of Fame ceremony. And to timestamp this Raw, Lawler says, get your digital camera ready, because up next, Melina is holding a special photo op.
Digital
Digital camera? Have you charged your batteries?
Let me put away my iPod. My iPod Mini.
I can't believe that that digital camera. Can you imagine?
My mom has one.
I can't imagine lugging a camera around.
I think the quality... Actually, no, a lot of the cell phone cameras are really great now. But I think lenses are...
What a marriage.
Better.
Phones and cameras. I mean, that's just
a great
idea.
Well, I think there's still a real place for digital cameras, though. I think SLRs are very popular now, but... You know, they're still around. Probably not as popular as they used to be.
Maybe old school cameras will make a real... I mean, not so much a comeback. I mean,
old school cameras? What do you mean?
I mean...
like film?
Just actual... Like, when people are outside, you typically... 90% of photos that are taken are probably with phones.
Yeah.
There are people that use regular cameras. But those, to me, it's like a big discrepancy. You're either using your phone or you're using one of those... crazy Nikon cameras that cost $1 million.
Yeah, an SLR. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Get
technical on me.
Sure.
There's no middle ground. Like, an average tourist is probably not lugging around some camera with a big lens to attach to it.
I don't know about that. I think they're more affordable and popular than ever.
You've had some family come visit here. How are they taking photos?
I was in Niagara Falls. I had an SLR.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well... Is that your role in the family, that you are the camera aficionado?
Yeah.
Like, that is your thing.
Yeah, my brother's an actual photographer, though. I'm just I'm a hobbyist.
A hobbyist. Don't downgrade.
I am.
Level of expertise.
No. My brother's an actual, like, fashion photographer, so he teaches me about that stuff.
So does he look at the photos and you're kind of worried about what he's going to say about it?
Oh, I don't even show him.
What the fuck, wait?
Yeah, I wouldn't even show him.
Where's the headroom?
Yeah, he says that, yeah.
Move on, John. There was press coverage of WrestleMania, and then we get Todd Grisham and Timbaland together. Grisham notes all the talent that he has produced. Nally Furtado, Jay-Z, Hall of Famer Snoop Dogg, and the Pussycat Dolls.
Oh, my.
A bit of a sliding scale at the end there.
They were pretty hot at the time.
The Pussycat Dolls had their run in the sun. And Timbaland, committing a no-no, takes the mic away from Todd Grisham.
I know.
He would have felt some shock value if he tried that with me. And so he takes the mic, does some woos, and says that he is Ricky Bobby.
This guy knows his way around the microphone.
Yes, yes. I come here as a fan tonight. I don't come here as Timberland tonight. I came to hear, woo! Can I get it again? Woo! That's right. I came to see Nature Boy because I am Ricky Bobby. I just came here to have fun, to see the main event. How many, are y'all wrestling fans like me? I mean, I just don't do music. I do wrestle, too. I told him I was going to slam him later on tonight in the ring. What you got to say?
Well, I understand you have a big album coming out tomorrow called Shock Value. It's huge. It's big. And also, you have your latest single coming out. It's called Throw It On Me, and you have a huge WWE influence on this video, correct?
Yeah, I'm getting some of the divas to be in it.
Oh, woo.
Really? Such as? Have you decided?
I haven't decided. I'm looking at Ashley. Ashley looks real good.
Well, I'll let her know. Ladies and gentlemen, the album comes out tomorrow, Shock Value. You don't have to be a rap fan, a hip-hop fan, a rock fan. It's just good music, correct?
Great music, just like great wrestling.
Great music, great wrestling, and great producer. Please give it up for Timberland.
This was a weird segment, man. I don't know what was up with Timberland here.
Okay, this is the best way I can try and get into his head. And I don't know the exact time frame of this, but Ricky Bobby was played by Will Ferrell.
Yeah, Talladega Nights.
Yes.
Yes.
After he was doing these woos. The funny thing is, Will Ferrell does play very much a Ric Flair character on Eastbound and Down, which I don't think had come out yet in 2007.
Huh.
So I don't know if there was some connection that he was trying to make and we just screwed this up, but I am pretty sure Eastbound and Down did not come out this early, so that wouldn't have even been a thing.
He said something to the effect of, I wrestle too. I'm Ricky Bobby.
I 2009 wrestle. Eastbound and Down came out.
So that connection.
Yeah, I guess that's what he was.
There. He said, I came here to see Ric Flair because I wrestle too, because I'm Ricky Bobby. What the fuck does that mean?
He then asked this crowd at Raw the night after WrestleMania, if you are all wrestling fans like me, no, Timberland, we're here for the music. He plugs his album, and then they talk about the single, Throw It On Me, which will have some of the divas in his music video, and specifically says he likes Ashley. And then Todd Grisham, in the most painful way possible, says that you don't have to be a fan of rap. It's just great music on this album. So it will appeal to everyone.
Even if you hate rap. Because you most
it's
likely...
It's great music.
You most likely will if you're watching this. This is not Garth Brooks. He also said there's going to be some great music on this album. Just like there's going to be some great wrestling.
Wrestling?
Wrestling.
That's what Brutus Beefcake called his form of wrestling.
Wrestling.
Ed Wrestling.
Yeah, this segment was really bad. I mean, I don't know. Grisham was awful here. Let his mic go. Timbaland, I don't know if he was just tired or something else, but he looked really off. It was, to me, just a disaster of a segment all around.
So, Throw It On Me, which would feature The Hives. Let's see who they ended up getting here on this. The divas that Timbaland ended up picking. The music video, directed by Justin Francis, was shot on April 19th, 2007 at Universal Studios. And it features former WWE divas Tori Wilson, Kelly Kelly, Layla, Maryse, Ashley Massaro, and Brooke Adams. The video premiered during Raw on May 21st, 2007.
Great. Okay, let's move on.
That was a great segment on Raw. Melina comes out and says that Timbaland will want her in the video, which apparently he did not, and says that Ashley is just another pretty face, and she has arranged a photo op for the paparazzi at ringside. Mm. How nice of her.
Yeah.
Very open relationship with the media Melina having here. So she's taking photos when Mickey James runs out and just attacks Melina, hits a jumping DDT, and then Mickey poses for the photographers. So that's our next program for the women's title.
Yeah. Nothing that notable.
That's this whole Raw.
Yeah. What was Mickey James's deal here? Like, what was... I don't recall her.
She was
like
a lumberjill that got involved in the post-match brawl and had no one to brawl with. So she was not going to make that same mistake on Raw the next night.
Yeah, she doesn't come out, like, talking or saying anything or giving a reason.
No, just attacked her.
Yeah, okay.
Message sent.
Yeah.
The Great Khali took on Super Crazy. Lillian Garcia has returned. Lawler has to read the ads for Jim Ross and plug Skittles. Crazy immediately attacks Khali. There's a missile drop kick by Crazy, not Khali, who stays standing. Then gets caught, chopped in the head, tree slam, and stands on top of Super Crazy for the win in 51 seconds. So this was the Great Khali destroying Kane the night before, destroying Super Crazy, and as we would see coming up after Backlash, the Great Khali would be figured into a WWE title program with John Cena. So big plans for the Great Khali in the spring of 2007.
Mm-hmm.
Lawler tells Ross not to tell him his... Lawler called the Great Khali ugly, but then told Jim Ross, don't tell him I said that. And Ross jokes, I think your secret is safe with me. I don't think I'll be speaking with anyone. And Jim Ross at this point was just making light of his voice for the rest of the show and how bad it sounded. He was very much aware, and it was just very tough for this guy to make it through. It was so raspy and just shot. His voice was shot.
Yeah, you felt really bad for him, and it was kind of tough to listen to.
Vince is backstage with Armando Estrada, and Vince yells when Estrada tells him to take it easy. And Vince snaps the cigar, puts Estrada up against the wall, and makes him the tag partner of Umaga to take on Lashley. So it will be a handicap match for the ECW title. Maria is backstage with the Hardys, who are now six-time tag team champions, and Matt says it's perfect. After their ups and downs, they are finally, once again, the tag champions.
Yeah, Jeff sounded really dry when he was speaking on this show and also the go-home show. And at this time, compared to what I've seen of him recently, in recent years in TNA, I think he's just vastly improved as a somebody on the in speaking on TV.
Lawler, then with the scariest update on the show, said that his voice is starting to go. It's like, one of you better stay with a voice here. He plugged The Condemned, the biggest premiere of the century.
The whole century. So 2001 to 2100.
This was the biggest one, The Condemned. Edge comes out on the ramp, sporting a pair of jeans, a zip-up hoodie, and a jacket that could have been purchased from the Goodwill over top.
He's just missing the Affliction shirt.
Yes. He had gone afflictionless on this particular Raw. He says the Money in the Bank may have made him a bit punchy as he recounts Jeff putting him through a ladder. He complains about Michaels and Orton wanting WWE title shots, stating he is better than them. He's beaten Cena countless times and states that he is the best and he will be the next WWE champion. And we thus have three challenges being made for John Cena's title. And that would end up being the four-way match at Backlash later that month, which ended up being some people's match of the year. It was an outstanding four-way match that this would lead to.
I think it also hurts, though, the Money in the Bank stip when you have a guy who lost being able to challenge for the title the next month.
Yeah. Yeah, they had that problem. They announced Michaels will take on Orton next week on Raw. And then our main event was Bobby Lashley against Umaga and Armando Estrada in a handicap match for the ECW title. What a visual this was. Bobby Lashley made his entrance, and they cut to this girl who was screaming for Bobby Lashley while wearing her ECW replica title.
Wow.
What a sight.
An
ECW replica title in 2007. Umaga knocked Lashley off the apron as he jumped up to enter and sends Lashley into the steps, beats him down in the ring as Estrada watches on. Lashley ducked a clothesline and attacked Estrada, and Umaga immediately stopped him. Ross is done here. It is all Jerry Lawler for the rest of the show.
He's not even speaking. Yeah. Yeah,
Jim Ross is done. He is just sitting there watching. There's a Samoan drop to Lashley. Lashley eventually gets his knees up, and then Umaga no-sells a DDT. The crowd, dead. There's a belly-to-belly to Lashley, and Estrada goes for the pin, gets a two-count, and then Lashley fights back. Scattering of boos is a spinning heel kick by Umaga, and Estrada then steps on the back of Lashley. There's stomps in the corner by Umaga, just tons of selling by Lashley, none very good. Samoan Spike gets blocked. Lashley fights back after selling and selling and selling. Ducks a foot, spears Umaga. Estrada breaks up the cover. And then Umaga misses Lashley, and he splashes Estrada. Umaga gets knocked to the floor, and it's Lashley who lifts Estrada, hits a running power slam, and pins him in 10 minutes, 21 seconds. And the show ends with Bobby Lashley walking up the ramp. He poses with the title, and Jerry Lawler says, "Good night."
Mm-hmm.
Night after Raw. The night after WrestleMania Raw.
Yeah.
Woo, what a momentous occasion.
No, it wasn't. I thought the match was pretty boring.
This was a very dull main event.
And the fact that we didn't have JR to kind of emphasize or at least heighten the climax a bit definitely didn't help. It also felt to me like a real drop in significance because I felt like the heat for the entire program was really between Vince and Trump. And with that out of the way, and just these two having a straight-up wrestling match, even if it was for the ECW title, which means nothing, it just did not capture any, if seemingly anybody's attention live.
This was one year where you did draw a lot from outside the company to build up WrestleMania. You brought in Donald Trump. Steve Austin was highly featured on WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. And this was a Raw that... You don't want to have this feeling coming out of WrestleMania where it very much feels like, you know, when you'd have Christmas break.
Yeah.
And then Monday you come back to school. Mm-hmm. That's what this felt like. Mm-hmm. It's like back to the grind. And that is not the feeling you want. And let's be honest, next week's Raw is going to blow this one away. I will guarantee that next week's Raw is going to blow away the 2007 version.
You mean in our present timeline?
Present timeline of 2016.
Yeah.
Because... Even this WrestleMania on Sunday, it's going to feature Austin, and it's going to feature Michaels and The Rock, and probably all those names are not going to be back the next night, but they will have enough to at least give you directions coming out of WrestleMania that hopefully grab your interest. But they certainly have their work cut out for them, given that WrestleMania is very much built around The Undertaker and Shane McMahon, those outside names that I just mentioned, Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
That's always a difficult part of WrestleMania when it's not your day-to-day guys that are in the key spots. There's only a handful of them.
Yeah. However, I imagine a lot of those people to be on that episode of Raw, you know, to kind of...
But they're not sticking around, I guess.
Sure. But I feel like nonetheless, I'm sure for the Raw coming up in present day next week...
This is going to be so tough for people coming back in the archives and finding the show.
I'm sure they've spent weeks probably writing that show, planning for it, setting that one up, whereas this show, it really felt like they put together really the morning of this night. I mean, look at really what was on this card. It was one long battle royal that lasted for, you know, pretty much more than a third of the show. A bunch of talking segments, a bunch of promos that really didn't end up anywhere. Didn't tell us anything. Melina coming out with that photo op. Timbaland. Really, the only thing of significance on this show, I would say, is getting to see Vince McMahon's hair. And Lillian Garcia getting her skirt pulled off, perhaps. That was the only memorable thing on this show.
This was such a skippable Raw the night after WrestleMania. Yeah. You could miss this, and you wouldn't be out of sync in any storyline. Yeah. And what's amazing is... The WWE had the right thinking with the Battle of the Billionaires of let's get something onto some other guys. Lashley and Umaga, let's get them into the spotlight here. I would say Lashley got perhaps nothing out of that match long term. And even short term, he did not feel like any kind of big star, even though he was put in the main event slot above John Cena. He was positioned as the top babyface on this Raw over anyone, and he felt less of a star than he did the last Raw we watched, where he did the match with Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
So, I mean, despite, and I'm not going to say their best efforts, because WrestleMania, he did not come off like the big star. Steve Austin did.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was, to me, very much short-term thinking of giving that crowd in Detroit the happy moment with Austin, but this is your consequence. The next night, Lashley is the guy you have to use moving forward, and he didn't feel like he benefited at all from this.
No, they really just kind of felt like extensions or like tools that Vince and Trump used to kind of battle their own feud. They're almost like, you know, it was almost like they're basically puppets, you know. And
there's no reason Lashley could have done the stunner to Trump, and I mean, I guess you don't want him to, like, stagger up. You want him to sell that he's dead from the stunner, but Lashley should have speared the guy, if anything.
Perhaps, yeah.
Like, he should have been given that glory spot at the end, even above him. Austin could stun Vince. He could stun Shane.
But the thing is, I think something like that, turning on Trump, fits more with Austin's character. I think it also goes to show just how underdeveloped somebody like Lashley might be. And maybe you can blame, you know, the ability of the performer on that. You know, I don't think
He was hardly as dynamic a performer as that push warranted at the time. I mean, look at the difference between him and John Cena on this show. For all you'll say about John Cena, I mean, the guy was always had a high level of charisma, which Bobby Lashley just did not have the same level.
You don't really get much of a sense of his personality, despite seeing him on TV so often.
It's taken years for him to develop. I think it's only now, over the last year in TNA, that I think TNA, they've done the better job with Bobby Lashley that you can look at in terms of emphasizing his strengths, the heel turn he's now having in TNA. They, to me, have gotten a lot more out of Lashley in terms of character development and getting him across as that. The WWE struggled with also bringing him up so early in his career. Yeah. I mean, he was brought up really, really early in 2005.
How do you think he would do if he came back?
My gut says he would very much get lost in the shuffle. I think he benefits in Impact because He is a name in amongst those people. I think they also understand the best way to promote Bobby Lashley, but I feel in the WWE, I mean, he still has an incredible look that they would, I think, very much favor someone like that. But I question how over he would get in WWE.
Mm.
So he's probably in a good spot right now where he can do wrestling and he can also do MMA as well, as TNA contract allows. We will now go to the message board. A few of you that did catch this show, this was not the most easy to find episode of Raw.
There's a Polish version.
Oh boy, why didn't we watch that?
A 1 hour long Polish version, which I actually had to rely on for the first hour because I didn't have the show with me for the first hour yesterday. So,
well, let's go to Christian. My question for you guys is about the tag title situation going into the show. Cena and Michaels were feuding at the time and then won the tag titles. This has happened a lot in wrestling history, and it's one of my most hated storylines personally. I feel it's kind of a cheap attempt to add heat to a match trying to play it off as tag champions battling each other when that really isn't the case. And in this feud, they didn't even carry their belts out at Mania. So my question is, what are your feelings on companies doing this storyline? Do you think it adds or at least could add something to a feud, or do you think it hurts the tag titles a little bit? I felt at the time, and they've done this numerous times, I don't think it's a bad idea when you have main eventers get the tag titles. However, in this instance with Cena and Michaels, they hardly elevated these titles or put any kind of stock into them. They literally were presented on this show as distractions to the real important title. And these things were an albatross to the team. I don't think it's inherently bad that you have two main event guys, whether they're feuding or not, win the tag titles. But this, it just didn't seem they had any hope of trying to use these tag. Nothing about this was about the tag titles. They were just simply trying to advance the story with Cena and Michaels, and the tag titles were used as a prop for it.
I'm not really a fan anytime you have non-established tag teams at the top of the division. I think it just kind of makes the rest of the tag team division look really unimportant. And especially, you know, to just kind of use those belts, which should be, can be at an equal level as your world championship, it just kind of makes them look like, you know, so secondary and just insignificant. So I don't think I've ever really been a fan of it.
All right, you are next.
We go to this guy who says, an opening match on Raw and a match dealing with 36 different guys. Is there any way something like this is accomplished today? Just like the OJ jury wanting to get out of the trial, Michael seemed like he would do anything to get out of the team with Cena. Vince trying on the variety of hats was the comedy type of 07. Good thing it wasn't 16, as Wade may have had to worry about his hat. Despite the opening with Michael Cena and the comedy with Vince, nothing too notable on the show. However, I let my VHS tape continue to run once I heard Shane McMahon's music to open the next week's Raw. It inevitably ended with Shane's match with Lashley turning into a swerve with Vince and Shane taking down Lashley. Could that foreshadow what may happen this Sunday? Speaking of the VHS tape, I have every Raw, TNA, and ECW show taped from 2005 to 2008. I will try to see if I can get this content converted and send it to you if you need any of it. Well, thank you. It's nice of you. We'll probably be taking a break from that era for the next week. But maybe in the future.
Maybe.
Good to know.
Garov, the only good thing on this show is Vince McMahon's funny antics. He has always been a great performer, and his facial expressions are always on point. It was hard to listen to poor Jim Ross, who lost his voice after screaming the prior night at WrestleMania. Any idea why this show was in Dayton, Ohio, and not in Detroit, where WrestleMania was? Because nowadays, they run the post-Mania Raw in the same city. Can't wait to hear about your contest next week. You know I'll be taking part. Also, nice talking to John on The Law last night. Yes, Garov did call into The Law.
What was it like
to speak Sunday night? But
what was it like to speak to Garov?
Well, there's a bit of a delay if you listen to the show. So,
Are you sure it was him?
I can't confirm.
Yeah,
I hope there was no case of identity theft.
All right, we go to, and you talked about the reason why they didn't run Detroit.
They didn't book Detroit. I mean, the year prior, they had booked Chicago. The night after WrestleMania 22, and then following it, I'm trying to remember. I think they've done the host city every year from 2008 onwards, I think.
We go to Robin from London. I will be listening to this review on my way from London to Dallas, and I hope next week's post-Mania WrestleMania Raw produces more memorable moments than this episode. My favorite part was Shawn Michaels walking up the ramp, burying the tag team titles after he'd already defended them in the first tag team battle royal. Question, to help me prepare for attending my first Raw event on Monday, could you both share your favorite post-Mania Raw moments? I'll do my best to look them up in between eating my body weight and barbecue and hosting the first review of Why Didn't You Come to WrestleMania event, which is when I play clips of the show to my non-wrestling fan brother, who I am staying with in Dallas. Love the show.
All right, well,
do you have any favorite post-Mania Raw moments? I think, certainly, I mean, they're always kind of filled with very memorable moments. I feel like the instance when the Fandango chant broke out in the middle of that Orton-Sheamus match, I feel is still a very memorable night to me, and maybe one that stands out. With the Daniel Bryan nights when he seemed like the most over guy. It was the night after that Sheamus-Daniel Bryan match, wasn't it? The squash.
Yeah, 2012. Yeah,
that was very memorable as well. I'm trying to think what else happened.
That was the year, certainly the night after WrestleMania became a much bigger priority, I would say, a bigger event. That was the same night that Brock Lesnar returned. Mm-hmm. And since then, I mean, the night after, I mean, that show in 2013 in New Jersey, that was the show. That was just an incredible crowd with Dolph Ziggler cashing in his Money in the Bank title match, and that was a super hot crowd, I recall.
Just being there for those crowds, I think, is such a great experience. And not just being in there, but like going into the arena, seeing all these guys dressed up. You're basically in the same vicinity as, you know, the biggest wrestling fans in the world are surrounding you the entire weekend. And I think it's really cool because most of the time I feel like most people watch wrestling in a very solitary manner. We don't really talk about it all that much with a ton of people in our daily personal lives. But when you're in the same city as you know, a whole WrestleMania of 80,000 people, it'd be tough not to run into another wrestling fan who likes the stuff as much as you. So it's just fun being around it and meeting people.
All right. Well, it's going to be a very, very busy weekend happening because of a WrestleMania weekend. We have lots of coverage up on the website throughout this week. You're listening to Review Away, and we have many shows to come this week. We're going to have an edition of What's Next coming out on Thursday, and then Friday night after the TakeOver special, which just looks like an incredible card, happening in Dallas, there will be another, a post edition of What's Next with Jason Agnew and Braden Harrington running through TakeOver. And then Saturday night, myself and Wei will be back. Late Saturday after the Hall of Fame, we're going to go through the Hall of Fame ceremony, Snoop Dogg's speech in depth, and I'm planning to watch at least one of the Evolve shows, and we'll run through that and whatever other news is happening, maybe a final look at the WrestleMania card, which is coming up Sunday, and we will have a live 3-hour post-WrestleMania edition of The Law with Wei Ting joining us in studio for the entire show. So it's going to be a lengthy day of WWE starting at 5 p.m., and you can listen to The Law through 2 a.m. Eastern time, Wei.
Awesome. Great. I look forward to it. I actually do. I'm joking. Like, I actually do look forward to the whole day. I think it'll be fun to talk about. A lot of interesting booking that they'll have to do.
And as we mentioned on Monday, big party going on at liveaudiowrestling.com on Thursday. One night only. One party only. Brian Mann and Nate Milton. They're going to keep it 100. And they have invited some guests, and they are getting ready for WrestleMania. It is the pre-show party at liveaudiowrestling.com with Brian Mann and Nate Milton returning. And that show will be dropping Thursday as well at liveaudiowrestling.com. You can subscribe to all of our podcasts. Just search for Live Audio Wrestling on iTunes. And we'll have a special WrestleMania edition of Ask Away coming up later this week at youtube.com/liveaudiowrestling.
Great.
What more could you ask for?
Not much.
Probably a review for next week.
Ah, right.
Do you have any thoughts, Mr. Ting?
Not quite yet. Maybe we'll announce it on one of our other shows.
Okay, we're going to have many opportunities. Literally, we don't know what we are doing next
week. Yeah, I mean, we actually spent like a half hour before recording this show even thinking about what we could do. And I think we've come to at least a consensus that by the end of this weekend, we'll probably be quite oversaturated with professional wrestling, and I'm sure all of you will be as well. I'm sure a lot of you are going to watch a lot of the stuff that's out there. So we're open to a number of suggestions, and we're actually in a position where we can take suggestions after this podcast comes out and still announce maybe on Saturday show or something. So
yes. We'll figure something out.
Yeah,
let you know.
Yes, tweet us.
It's going to be a hangover period next week. I think people are going to be overdosing on wrestling this weekend. So we'll find something that can fulfill whatever appetite you have left.
Yeah.
So that's going to wrap things up. Thank you to Wei for joining us.
You're welcome.
And getting through this episode of Raw from 2007. What a chore this turned out to be. All right, so there you go, folks. LiveAudioWrestling.com. Keep it locked there each day this week, and we will chat with you later on. Tons of WrestleMania coverage, and we will speak with you then as Timbaland takes us out. I've been picking that ass and been giving my chance. I ain't gonna play. I really want to get to know you. That's what I told you. Girl, you know I don't play. I want to put it in your mouth. Girl, you better do it.